Bonjour Bertrand.
Bonsoir Bertrand.
Okay.
All right. So I think we'll start and we'll see how we get on. I'm sorry if it's noisy and echoey, but there's not a lot we can do. We've got a number of items on the agenda. First item on the agenda is the discussion that we had last time on Principle E or Point E. As agreed, Bart and I sent out a note setting out our reasons why we believe that that the current wording is acceptable. We sent that out. We haven't had any response so far. It's something we need to actually tie up and sort out. I'm not aware of anyone wanting to speak to the point except for Edmund. So, Edmund, would you like to have one last shot at seeing if you can put your position, and then we'll move forward from there.
Which point?
Principle E. That is your point that you raised at the last meeting about controversy within the territory. Within the territory.
Okay. Well, I guess the main item is really whether we feel that outside of scope of the charter is that's how I see it. The charter specifically talks about being non-contentious and stuff like that. And we're redefining the scope and saying that, it should be non-contentious within the territory. So I feel we need to address the scope issue.
Okay. So you explained your position at the last meeting. I put out a note that puts puts how I feel, and Bart and I together wrote a note that puts how we feel, and in fact, drawing the distinction between what you talked about last time, which is purpose, and what the scope actually says. We're reaching a point with these issues where we need to deal with them one way or another. So I guess what I'd like to do, and if there are any objections, is to ask if anybody actually, if anyone else apart from Edmund has a problem with the current wording of point E or principle E in the draft document. If anybody does have a problem with it, it would be good if they spoke up now, plus a 6-second delay for coming off mute.
Chris Yannis here.
Yes, Yannis.
I can tell you that this information was passed to the GAC list, and one GAC member, important GAC member, reacted and expressed to you that the current wording, which is proposed in the document, is preferable to maintain. So, and I think that would be prevailing feeling in the GAC. So, I think this is my feeling.
Thank you very much. Does anybody want to say? To say that they want that anybody else apart from Edmund who has put his point very clearly.
Chris,
this is Kim.
Actually, on your reply note, you mentioned about Jesus. You quote something from Jesus, right?
In the note, yes.
Actually, I read the Jesus. I'm thinking. Maybe a better way to put it in, the proposal stream and delegation should be non-contentious within territory or among territories, if necessary. Because from my understanding, Wizards said countries should not be involved in decisions regarding another country called top-level domain. The estimate interest as expressed and defined as by each country by in diversity, something like that, regarding decision affecting the CCTLD need to be respected. But bearing that in mind, currently many territories assigned with CCTLD actually are not countries, right?
Yes, but we have a definition. We have a definition handed down from the board, which is very specific, which refers to.
You mean the definition of territory, or?
No, definition of what we're talking about, which refers to those territories listed on the ISO 31661 list.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on that list, you're entitled to a CCTLD.
Yeah, I understand that. But currently, that's a fact, right? Currently, many territories assigned with the CCTLD actually are not countries, right? They're territories.
That's the whole point. That's why we refer to them as territories.
Yeah, adhering with the declaration of principle 63, that the countries should not be involved in decisions regarding another country's country code top level domain. We should agree that one country should not influence the delegation, operation, or management of other countries' CCTLD. But we also should see the need of CCTLD's operation to reach consensus within its own country, right?
No.
Why not? Especially when there's no previous standard such as ISO 3166.
Because all that does is to allow... Okay, let me, I'm actually not, where we sit right now is up until this particular point in our discussions, we have dealt with, we've consistently referred to territory.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't, we've deliberately not moved outside of that because the territories on the 31661 list, and they are called territories on that list,
Mm-hmm.
Are the territories to whom an IDN CCTLD under the fast track could possibly be delegated. For us to be suggesting that we should now introduce a separate definition to enable, for example, one country who claims to have a right over another territory to interfere in the delegation of a CCTLD to that territory is completely outside of our mandate as a working group. Because the resolution passed by the board asked us to come up with a methodology to see if we could come up with a methodology to enable the territories listed on the ISO 31661 list to obtain an IDN CCTLD in a fast track. What it did not ask us to do was to work out a way in which we could deal with any political issues that may or may not arise with respect to disputes over whether something is a territory or a country. We have a list.
I'm not arguing with you what is the definition of territory, nor what is a territory, what is a country. I'm not arguing with that. But the thing is, since you mentioned visas, so I raised the visas, I think because it says countries should not be involved in the decision regarding another country's CCTLD domain. We agree on that. But also I think if that's that's something in all countries, I think they also should reach consensus, right?
No.
That's my point.
I understand your point, but I mentioned in my note with this in the context of supporting the proposition that management or running of a CCTLD is a matter for the territory concerned. I didn't raise the WISIS point, or for that matter any other point, in order to support an argument to change the basis upon which we are dealing with these issues. The context of the WISIS point is very clearly made in the discussion about whether the matter should be contentious or non-contentious within territory. if you want to have a discussion about what is a territory, what is a country, and whether or not a country should have a, whether or not it matters for the purposes of the fast track, then we need to stop what we're doing and we need to go back to square one and start all over again. Because every single thing we've done so far has been based on the premise that we're talking about a list of territories on the ISO 31661 list, and that's all we're talking about.
But I don't want to hog this,
so if anyone else has anything they want to say, then, you know.
Because there's nowhere we said anything like a standard as ISO 31661. If there is something for the standard of 616, ISO 6166, that's no problem. But the thing is, we don't have any standard of that.
Yes, we do. We have a list. It's an ISO list, and that's what we use. That is the standard.
But do we follow the rule of ISO 31661? Do we follow the standard of ISO 31661?
Yes.
My understanding is no.
I don't understand. I'm sorry. Perhaps you could explain what you mean.
I think on the ISO 31661, that's agreement, right? There's agreement regarding that.
Yes, that's the basis of the territories that are entitled to a CCTLD.
Yes. Yes. But right now we don't have anything like that for IBM.
But if you go back to the basis of the board resolution says, based on the territories listed on the ISO 31661 list, please come up with a fast track methodology. That's what the resolution says, and it's what the charter says, and it's one of the overarching principles. If you're not on the 31661 list, then you're not in this. Then you don't play in this game. But if you are on the 31661 list, then you do. That's the basis of all the discussions we had right from the very beginning.
Jonathan here.
Yes, Jonathan.
May I understand again the concern expressed by Edmund? Because I may have missed something that Edmund has pointed out previously. Edmund has any concern with the work within the territory?
Edmund can speak for himself.
Okay,
Edmund. Just very briefly, Edmund, what is your point?
Oh, well, the briefest way to put it is that the charter specifically states that we should be looking at a process whereby we would be introducing a limited number of IDN CCTLDs that are non-contentious.
Okay.
So,
yeah, the purpose
and stop that. Well, that's quite clear in the writing of the charter. The note that Chris sent out, I missed it. I found it on my spam mail for some reason. I just see it now. Argues that based on the principle of the current practices of delegation of CCTLDs, the addition of within the territory is appropriate, and I think that's actually not true. Well, but I guess, you know, that's the point of departure.
Okay. Evan, can you explain a little bit more the concern from GTLD about including the work within the territory? I just want to understand more specifically where the concern is.
Well, I guess not really looking at it as a GTLD perspective, but looking at it, you know, as a participant in this working group, you know, I think what Jane was just mentioning is also a very, important matter. I was going to talk about that as well, is whether within the territory or territories that are relevant. I think that's what Jane is talking about.
Could you expand on what that might mean, Edmund?
what that might mean would be, you know, if I may take some, take an example, there are certain CCTLDs that are like, I think .cx is one of which that is with the Australian government.
Yes,
or,
but that is,
you know, then within
yes,
that,
but
within
that,
that territory, then
that's
it's
the territory of Australia, isn't it?
Right, right. So it probably should, you know, if we if we say territory is based on the list, then territory is the CX itself,
no, no,
and
no,
that's
no,
not
no,
right.
No, sorry, Edmund. That is a territory. No, no. Hold on. You need to draw. We need to be really clear here. That is a territory. That is an Australian territory. That means that it is. That means that the government is the Australian government. So it happens to have its own CCTLD, but it's the government of that territory is the government of Australia.
So are you changing the definition of territory?
No, I'm simply saying that if you go back to the bottom line, the bottom line says you need to have the government, the local internet community, and the CCTLD manager. In the case of .cx, the government there is no government of .cx. Sorry, there is no government of Christmas Island except for the Australian government. But if that happens, there is no Christmas Island government. So if you were looking at a situation where you were asking whether or not an application for an IDN CCTLD was actually acceptable or not, there's no argument there.
Okay. I'm sure there are examples where there may be a government in
a... Well, give me a suggestion where this...
if you don't mind, if I use you as an example, let's say if... Hong Kong as a territory want to apply for something for Hong Kong.
Yep.
But that's within territory, right? As your definition.
Does it have a government?
It did have a government.
It does have a government, doesn't it?
I don't know. It depends on how you define the territory. So just use this as
an example. The territory is Hong Kong.
Okay. Does it have a government?
It has a government, does it not?
Okay. So basically, if Hong Kong want to apply for something, does China have the right to say something about it? Do they need the authorization from Chinese government?
Is the Hong Kong
government
independent?
I think it should be, right?
Is the Hong Kong government independent?
Chris, James. Well, I try to help here to, you know, to resolve possibilities, the differences.
Jonathan, before we move forward, I just want to say one thing. We need to be really careful here because we're talking about two different things.
I understand.
So we've got to be clear of what we're talking about.
Yes.
Currently the situation is that the definition of territory is a standing definition. It's never been questioned. It's a definition. It's the ISO 31661 list.
Do we have the territory definition? Officially?
It's on the list. Sorry, Jonathan, I just wanted to say that because I thought it was important that we were clear.
That's on ISO list, right?
Yeah, but hold on a second, Jan, because Jonathan was going to say something.
I think it is not so much about the sovereignty of one country over another territory or another economy. If I put it as an example, if we in Hong Kong apply for something like China, in Chinese, for example.
Who would we be, Jonathan?
Sorry?
Who would we be? You said we apply. Who would we be?
The .hk CCTLD manager in Hong Kong. It would not happen, but just for argument's sake.
You'd need to have the support of the government and the local internet community.
Yes.
And it would need to be meaningful.
Understood. Just in case, I don't know why, but somehow it got through.
I think Jane's point is to try to guard against, you know, this possibility from happening.
Yes, but what happens if you have disputed territory, Jonathan?
Sorry?
What happens if you have disputed territory, Jonathan?
No. I think it is not as complicated as that. Just in case one of the ISO 3166 listed territory apply for an IDNC CLD, which is not his or her, and according to some of the definitions.
How would that be possible?
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? That's possible. Everything is possible. We shouldn't say it's impossible, so we're going to ignore it.
Who could object to China's application?
I think
if something like as Jonathan said happened, China has concern about it.
That's not my question. My question is, who could object to China's application?
Excuse me?
Who would be able to object to China's application? Who would have the right to object to China's application?
Chris, I think the situation is an application by Hong Kong for a China IDNC CTLD.
Of course crazy. That's one specific example, Jonathan.
Yeah, this is
So are you suggesting that we write a policy that makes sure that Hong Kong can't apply to something, or are you suggesting we write a policy that makes sure that any other territory can't apply to something?
No.
We're saying if relevant territory has concern about it, that's not consensus.
What's the relevant territory?
Let's say Hong Kong and China.
Are there any others? Are there any others apart from Hong Kong and China?
I bet he will.
Sorry?
So?
There's something
we have concern about it.
I still don't understand. I'm sorry. I'm asking you to tell me whether it's just Hong Kong that you have a concern about, or if you're concerned about anything else.
I think that's an example, and there are possible other situations.
Okay, so can I have some other examples, please?
Oh, Chris,
do you want an exhaustive example, or what?
I'd like one other example, or possibly two other examples.
But another example, Chris, is someone which is not CNX, someone in Shenzhen or in Shanghai, an individual or whoever, they try to apply for the China IDNC CTLD.
But how could they possibly, Jonathan? They don't have the support of the government.
Again, this is crazy.
We give you an example as which territory has a government, but you think that's not enough. That's an example, right?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. No.
I don't know why you're saying this is impossible. Everything is possible.
Now, Chris, Janis here. I have a feeling that we are stuck on the question and we don't want to understand each other, so we don't hear each other. I think we should move on, because we still have another four questions on the agenda. And here is clear disagreement. And I would suggest to put this aside and move on to the next agenda item.
Sure, I'm happy to do that, Janis, and that's fine. But we need to be clear here that My understanding up until the beginning of this telephone call was that, with the exception of one person, possibly two, we had consensus on Principle E. If we don't have consensus on Principle E, then that actually ends up throwing everything effectively out, because you can't proceed on this basis. There is either some form of objection procedure or there isn't. So I'm happy to move on, but funnily enough, the next item on the agenda is actually a follow-on, which is the objection procedure. So do you want us to move? Are you suggesting, Yannis, that we ignore that as well and move on to the next item?
On objection procedure, I can inform you that we had a GEC conference call on this specific question. And the GEC was of the view that for the fast track, taking into account the specificities of fast track, that this is for limited number, non-contentious applications, that there should not be any specific, particular, tailor-made objection procedure. At the same time, of course, the process will be transparent and this goes without saying that anybody who has concern can raise it with the board at any time. So, and that would be applicable to the fast track.
Okay. Does anybody want to say that there should be Edmund, I know you think there should be an objection procedure. Does anybody else think there should be an objection procedure? Apparently not.
I'm not very clear. If we don't have an objection procedure, if something, if somebody raises objection, what happens?
Nothing.
Okay. So I think we should have objection procedure.
The final word and the final decision in any circumstances belongs to the board. And we may like it, we may not like it, but this is written in ICANN's bylaws. So everybody, whether that is individual, whether that is CCTLD operator, whether that is a government, is entitled to send whatever they feel like sending to the board.
Yep.
And board will take it into consideration, taking its decision.
Yep.
So therefore, the potential objection is covered by the common sense and by the best practices and by the operations of the board. So,
yep.
And again, if we want to ruin introduction of fast-track IDNs, then we may continue in insisting on things by having in mind one or two specific examples which are, contested or are not resolved. So, but we should think about those, 20, 30 countries which are ready and territories which are ready to put forward their applications and would like to do that. And we have an opportunity to do this in Paris. So please keep that in mind.
Does anybody disagree with Yannis? Dan, does that answer your question or not?
Chris, this is Bethel. Just to support and go in the direction that Yannis has mentioned, I think there's a general agreement for not instituting a formal objection procedure that would basically call for objections. We all agree as well that the ultimate decision will lie on the board. I think the key question we're discussing here is that knowing there will be objections potentially, is there any agreed feeling on how to handle those objections, should there come, in order to avoid that the whole burden is immediately at the highest level? Is there anything that we can feel could be done to alleviate contentions at different levels? To give just a concrete example of a problem that might have occurred, imagine that knowing that France has a lot of CCTLDs related to the different territories. A couple of years ago, some years ago, New Caledonia was really on the verge of discussing whether it was going to declare independence or not independence. If at that time
And provided that France, of course, had wanted, in general terms, to use another script to describe the various territories, I could very well have imagined at that moment that this territory that has an existence that is duly recognized by the ISO 3166 would have chosen a denomination in this other string, in this other script, that wouldn't have been exactly the one that the central French government has chosen for the territory itself in the French structure. How would we have handled this? Because according to the mechanism whereby the territory has basically the authority of choosing the string, if we give, or if we had given at that date, the responsibility of the ICANN board to basically solve the problem between France and a local authority that is choosing in one territory of France to choose another denomination, I don't see how the board could alleviate that. So is there any mechanism that would encourage solving the different problems at the lowest level possible?
I
think we're digging too deep. This is not a geostrategic meeting. So we're discussing very specific task which was asked by the board to perform. We cannot resolve geopolitical questions in this group, and neither in the GAC, neither in ICANN. So this is not our task.
I know, Yanis, I'm not arguing at all about this group solving the problem. What I'm just highlighting is that we cannot have at the same time something that basically establishes the absolute right of one territory on the ISO list to define its string, and on the other hand, putting the whole discussion on the board to decide whether any objection that might come is addressed by the board. This doesn't run together, does it?
But last 10 years since ICANN has created, board has sufficient wisdom to handle these and or similar type of issues. So why we are trying now, when we have very limited time to produce this recommendation, we're trying to think for the board. Let board think after we are proposing that, and in reality, if we cannot propose one solution, maybe we should go to the board and say, so there was a disagreement, and one part of the working group thought that this would be the way forward, another part would be this, so that would be the way forward, and let board to decide which way they want to go.
Yanis, just one point. I agree with what you say, but never in the last 10 years has the board had any decision to make in the creation of a CCTLD string. CCTLD strings are very particular. They're not like GTLDs, and I think this is the point that we're turning around. It's a very specific decision to accept a string.
Can Carrie speak, please?
Carrie, go ahead.
During the course of these 10 years, the candidate CCTLD strings were defined by the ISO 3166 maintenance agency.
Exactly.
That is correct. That is correct, Carrie, and that is continuing to be the case.
No. There are two things in the list of the ISO. There's the list of territories and the list of strings. I fully support the fact that the list of territories is the reference, but the string has never been decided by ICANN.
Bertrand, that is absolutely correct. The string has never been decided by ICANN. The string is decided by the two-letter code, which ICANN decides to use as the string, is decided by ISO. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, it seems to me to be really simple. The question is simple, but the answer may be complicated. We currently have a circumstance where the only thing that is different between the process that we're talking about and the current situation is that the string itself, right, is going to be designated by the territory. And the purpose of this process was to try to come up with a methodology that meant that the string was chosen, picked by the territory, but under a set of criteria that were acceptable, which basically meant that it was meaningful, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that is not acceptable, if what you are suggesting is that another territory, and I specifically say territory, has the right to prevent another territory from choosing a string subject to those criteria, that it is actually meaningful, denotes the territory, etc., then my view is that basically throws every single Withers principle out of the window.
No.
Because what you're doing is you're saying, I'm not talking about France and New Caledonia.
Mm-hmm.
It's for France and New Caledonia to sort that out. Because effectively, France and New Caledonia New Caledonia is a territory of France.
Yeah, this is exactly my point, Chris.
That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a circumstance where there is a dispute.
This is exactly the point, Chris. Sorry to insist. You said this is for France and New Caledonia to sort out if the problem had arisen. But may I say that, as far as I know, New Caledonia is on the ISO 3166 as a territory.
Yes.
And this is exactly the kind of problem we're discussing.
Are you suggesting to me, Bertrand, are you suggesting to me that the New Caledonian government, the local internet community,
uh-huh.
and the CCTLD manager could put forward an IDN CCTLD and the French government would have no input and no say? Is that correct?
Certainly not. And this is exactly what I'm addressing.
Does the New Caledonian government have obligations to the French government?
Of course they do.
Right. Outside, nothing to do with this process, just they do.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's got nothing to do with this process.
But it does, because the question is how do you define the government of the territory?
It doesn't. The French government tell the New Caledonian government not to do something?
Of course.
Right. Thank you. That means that's the point. The French government can tell the New Caledonian government not to do something because New Caledonia is a territory of France.
Uh-huh.
That is not what we are talking about in this discussion. In this discussion, what we are talking about is interested parties, to use a term that's been used two or three times in the discussion that happened 15 minutes ago. We're talking about the ability, not of a government that effectively has control, but another government, to interfere in an application. There is a massive, massive difference, Bertrand. Your right to tell New Caledonia what to do is governed by a host of laws that exist, and you can use those laws to do that if that's what you need to do. You cannot use this process to do that. It is completely inappropriate. This process is simply about delegating an IDN CCTLD. If you have no right at law to interfere, you cannot interfere in this process.
Chris, Jonathan here.
Yes.
I just want to ask another question. With our four-stage methodology, particular stage 2 and 3 and 4 are the really real work to be done. You know.
Yeah.
Is there an open comment period in each of these three stages
whereby
people can know what's going on?
Nope. Well, it depends on what you mean by an open comment period. What do you actually mean, Jonathan?
Okay. I'm not meaning a very... Let me put it this way. I guess to solve the differences expressed by the members, rather than an explicit objection handling process, if there is an opportunity during the stage 2, 3,
and or for people to know that, you know, an application is being processed and, you know, and the string being applied for is this. Then it may ease some of the concerns of some of the members about the lack of an objection handling process, including the GNSO.
So hang on, just let me make it clear here. What you're suggesting is that a territory should put its string up for public comment.
Or during the stage two and three, that it is a requirement for the applicant to agree that the string that is being applied for can be publicized on the ICANN website.
Well, we have that, I think.
If we have that, would that help to ease the concern of the, you know, of the members about the lack of objection handling process?
We talked about this last time. We said, I think it was Yanis's suggestion actually, that at some point, and we think the point would be once the string had been technically checked, it would become public. So there would be a point. Sorry, Yanis.
No, Chris, this is no question. The board meetings, the transcripts of board meetings, you have 72 hours after each board meeting. Board works absolutely transparently. There is no way that the information can be hidden. So any application which comes to the board in 72 hours is made completely public.
Yes, but I think we actually intended that it would be, I think that's right, Jonas, but I think it was intended that we would actually arrange for it to be, that there would be a process where it would be declared prior to that point.
A board is having information points, and I have no doubt that the moment board will launch the process, whether new GTLDs or IDN CCTLDs fast track, during each board meeting, there will be point of information on progress where staff will report to the board what's going on. The board is able to understand the scale of exercise and allocate sufficient resources to manage the process. So I cannot see any circumstance when board would not listen information on how a process is going on from the staff. And all these information are publicly available 72 hours after the board meeting.
Jonathan here. How about earlier? We were talking about 72 hours before the board meeting. But how about the application is still under stage 2 or 3?
That's what Yanis was just saying, Jonathan.
I'm trying to explain that the board will not let the staff work on these important issues without having information on the progress in the work. So therefore, before the board meeting, agenda of the board meeting is published, and in the agenda, you most probably will read the information on application of that territories. So by that you will have a sense what is in pipeline. And then 72 hours after the discussion, all information is published as a board minute. And I can assure you that this is close to transcript. The board minutes are close to transcript.
I'm actually talking about a time much earlier than the application being, you know, brought to the board for final approval. I'm talking about stage 2 and stage 3, whereby the string is still being evaluated, or IANA is still doing some work on it. Will those applications be made transparent?
I am talking about the minute board will launch the process. Every board meeting or every second board meeting, meaning every 30 days or every 60 days, board will be informed on the progress in transparent way. So information, who is applying for what string, will be public.
Will be public, right?
It will be public. Will be published on the ICANN website, whether specifically or through board meeting minutes. So, and everybody who followed the process at any point can use their rights to approach the board and express their concerns. And this is according to bylaws.
Okay.
That answers your question, Jonathan.
Yeah. So given that all the applications, whether they will be finally accepted or not, will somehow be made transparent at one time or another during this methodology.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to understand, will say Edmund, representing GNSO, will, given that you know all the constituencies know all the applications in program, will there still be a need for the objection handling then, given that you know what's going on?
Now, let me try to give you an example, very hypothetical and completely unrealistic. Komori, go to the board and say, we want a .com, which would be abbreviation or first three letters from Komori in, I don't know, Arab language. So this will be clearly, board will be informed from the very beginning that this application has been submitted. So by that time, GNSO say, hey, I think that this is something wrong here, and we'll go to the board and say, we think that for Komori.com in Arabic language is a bad idea. And most probably board will say, yes, it is really a bad idea because somehow we there is already .com. But yeah, I mean, we are not talking about rocket science. We are talking about common sense. And the board is very cognizant of all the sensitivities, and board will take very wise decisions.
This is Edwin. I guess Jonathan was asking a question. I don't think I can speak for the GNSO, but I think there are two items here. One, if I understood Jonas correctly, the process is that the CCTLD proposal will be tabled at one board meeting. That would make it public. And then the board would deliberate on it and make a decision probably the next board meeting or the board meeting after. That's sort of the public publishing of what you meant, right? Did I get it correctly?
Yes. Staff regularly informs the board on every development within ICANN. On every issue, staff, on every important issue, staff is working on. And here I'm talking under control of Kurt and Denise. So they're people who are reporting to the board on a regular basis on all important issues. And this is not just for to take decisions. This is also to inform what is going on, what's the problem, what staff is thinking, in which direction they are seeking the input and advice of the board, that staff is performing right, and to avoid any, let's say, potential negative decision at the end. So the process is very transparent because all board meetings are, the minutes of the board meetings are published in 72 hours after the board meeting. And the agenda of the board meeting is published before the board meeting on ICANN website, on public part of ICANN website.
Right. I guess, yeah, that clarifies the part, and I think that's definitely always in the already in the current ICANN process, and it's almost like a last resort, if you will. But I guess the part where I somewhat disagree in is really whether or not the fast track mechanism should have a process built in place before this last resort, right? This last resort is always going to be there, I agree. But whether there should be something that we create, maybe we consciously say no, but I'm not convinced at this point that we should say no yet. The other thing is that I think if we hit a situation, the board finds that there's some problem, potential problem, or receives some objection, the board will probably have to find another process, which is, you know, which perhaps this is the kind of process that we should put in place already now. Again, this comes back, you know, goes back to the previous discussion whether we should do it or not, and, you know, I guess the decision that you know, how we present it.
Board is not asking us to put in place board procedures. Board will make decision when on any issue which comes to the for the decision making. So I think we should not go beyond our mandate. So if we have concern that the applications may not be transparent, I think that I dissipate all these concerns, because the process will be absolutely transparent. And once somebody will learn something which is not acceptable or raises concerns, nothing prevents that entity, whether that would be a government or a supporting organization, council, or advisory committee, to go to the board and indicate that concern. And then board will act accordingly, whether it will take into account that concern or it will reject that concern. But that is a board decision, and we cannot today anticipate all potential actions of the board. They will depend on many issues, many circumstances.
Yeah, Jonathan here, can I make one suggestion? It's a simple one. What about if once we receive an application, what about we just put it on the website? Just like in the past when I can deal with the STLD applications, you know, the 9 or 10 applications, once those applications come in, they will be posted on the website. Everyone can look at that. So can
Jonathan,
you say,
Jonathan, not yes. until, no, not until, I have no objection to posting it on a website, but not until it's passed the checks. Because you don't want, if it does, just to take a simple example, if there's a technical issue and the technical committee raises a technical point with the territory and goes back to them and starts talking about that, it would be inappropriate for the string to have been published prior to that exercise, because apart from anything else, it would be misleading. There would be an implication that it was actually going to happen, that it was technically correct, and so on. So the principle of, I have no problem with the principle of actually publishing it, but I have a problem with the principle of publishing it at that particular stage. I think you have to wait until the end of stage two.
Chris, I think that there will be many, many territories which will proudly and voluntarily announce their intentions to go for the IDN CCTLB string for domestic political purpose.
I agree. But that's for them to do.
Yeah.
But for us to be suggesting that the publication should occur before it's been passed by the technical committee, I think is inappropriate. I think we could say that it should be published after that's happened, but not before. Do you understand what I'm saying, Jonathan?
I know, but I believe for most applications, you know, we shouldn't have a lot of contentious issues. I'm just trying to, you know, to see whether, you know, we can quickly resolve, you know, concerns of constituencies like the GNSO or
China.
You know, if knowing that it's not going to make a lot of differences.
I'm sorry, I don't actually understand. What I've just said to you is, do you understand what I've said, and are you okay with the concept of the string becoming public, not at the stage that you talked about, but at a slightly later stage?
Well,
hang on, Jonathan.
I'm just trying to. I think actually the difference will be small, isn't it?
No, the difference is that the territory itself may choose to do so, but to make the territory do so, prior to it being checked by the technical committee, for example, is not appropriate, is it?
But in most cases, the string won't be too far off the track, wouldn't it?
But yes, but it might. That's not the point, though. The point is it might be.
Chris, I think we should move on. I think we're speaking about one particular case, and we will not resolve it because this has not been resolved for a while. But maybe we can go to other items and see whether we can resolve or think how to address the concerns, let's say, one-to-one offline.
May I just add one word? Actually, Chris, I don't quite get the reason you gave why not we couldn't publish at the very beginning.
Because I don't want to get tied up in this again, and I'm happy to talk to you about this outside of this discussion, but I'll say it one more time. Until you can be sure. Oh, okay. I'm going to make an assumption that the linguistic panel and the technical committee are going to be involved in this process.
Mm-hmm.
Until you can be sure that the string proposed by the territory meets the technical requirements and the linguistic requirements, you cannot insist that the territory publishes the string.
Because why not? If this is a transparent progress, why not?
Right. Well, okay, I'm not going to have this discussion with you right now because Yanis has just made a very valid point that we need to move on. So let's have a discussion about this on the list. You tell me what it is that you think should happen, or tell the list what you think it is that should happen, and I and other people can respond to that on the list. It's really a minor point. Quite frankly, I don't care. If territories don't mind publishing their string, then it doesn't cost me in the slightest. And as Yanis quite rightly says, they're probably going to do that anyway. So it's a minor issue and not something that we should really be spending that much time on. But if everyone's okay, I'm going to suggest we move on to the next item on the agenda. Okay. So the next item is what Bart and I have now decided to refer to as the LEAP, the Linguistic Expert Advisory Panel. Everyone's seen the note, I hope?
Yes.
So comments, input, thoughts?
Chris, I can tell you, Jack also discussed the Linguistic Expert Committee issue during the call. And I must tell you that we don't have, similar views. I have a feeling that there is a misinterpretation of the tasks of the linguistic committee. What the committee will do and what the committee will not do, what will be power of committee and... So the main concern is the issue of sovereign decision of the territory concerning the name of the string. So I think that we need still talk to GAC members, and I think that this is the best way to do it is in a face-to-face meeting in Paris on Saturday afternoon. To try to explain once again the real meaning of Linguistic Expert Committee. One concern is that it puts another layer on the fast track and may make fast track slow track. Maybe we can think to rename the Linguistic Committee, which sounds like a permanent body, to something rather like ad hoc body, as I suggested a while ago to the list, as simply a pool of experts, where in case of necessity, board can draw on. for advice and comments. So this might be avenue to explore, but the committee as a permanent committee most probably will not be accepted by a number of GAC members.
Yeah, let's speak very briefly.
Yeah.
Although they're certainly not going to be identical, they're nonetheless going to be significantly similar issues reared when the discussion of IDM TLD labels is migrated outside of the fast track. So there's a good degree of, there's reason to suspect that anything that's labeled committee on is likely going to be referred to as these similar issues arise in the future. And since this entire fast track is predicated on the notion of no prejudice whatsoever, we might want to label every component of it really, really carefully.
Thank you, Terry. I agree with that.
For instance, the example was mentioned. There is an Arab working group in the framework of the Arab League. And they have been working on the names of strings already for many years. And it seems to me that there is a full agreement among Arab countries in the framework of this group on the use of characters in different strings. So in that case, certainly the only thing what board will need to do, since there are no Arab speakers on the board, to have somebody who says, yes, what is proposed really is what the board is told it is. So, and there is no need for any assistance and help because Arab countries are ready and just waiting a whistle to put forward everything they have agreed among themselves already in this field. So there might be cases where board would need to have somebody assisting territory if territory would ask for that assistance. But that certainly would be on ad hoc basis. That may be just to make this construction lighter than it sounds now. Though myself, I can very easily live with that personally, but maybe we need to work more on the wording that makes this whole construction lighter.
Okay, I just want to pick up on a couple of points before I throw the discussion out to anyone else. Do you not think that the current document, the due diligence document that we've put out, actually deals with that by making it very clear that it's a due diligence check for the board, that it's not, that it's based on the documentation provided by the territory, et cetera, et cetera? And secondly, interestingly enough, you're quite right about the Arab states and having had a committee for many years, you know, working out what the name should be. But interestingly enough, I haven't yet met a single. I've asked seven different Arab state governments, and each one of them has said, "Yes, we're quite happy to have a sort of, you know, check on this by a committee." But that's just an aside. Do you not think that the current phrasing works? It's based on the documentation provided by the territories, no right of veto.
No, I think that due diligence document was produced as a result of GAC discussion and based on what I told you after the GAC discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And as a GAC, I forwarded it to the list, but there hasn't been any reaction from the GAC members on that particular document.
No, of course, I understand that. I was just asking you whether you thought that the document goes some way to dealing with those issues.
Let me know. No, I will answer in 5 minutes. No. Listen, I'm dealing with five issues at the same time.
You don't have to answer at all. It's perfectly fine. But it would be good at some point to know whether it does or it doesn't, because the purpose of shifting things was to try and make it palatable to people. But that's enough of sort of you and me bouncing back and forth. Does anybody else want to talk to the linguistic experts advisory panel bit of this discussion?
Chris, Jonathan again.
Jonathan.
I just want to clarify a prior understanding. I'm not sure whether it is still correct or not. My understanding of the thing that the leap will do is that it says if the territory already have its official language in the UN UNGEGM manual listed there, then the LEAP actually doesn't do a lot. It's virtually, you know.
It just checks to make sure it is actually listed,
yeah. So it is only there for the odd cases where the name of the territory appears on the ISO 3166 list, but not on the UN list.
There are other examples, though.
Okay, that's my understanding.
Yeah, that's one example.
Okay.
It's also there for where the territory does appear on the UN list.
Yeah.
But the language does not.
Okay.
So India, for example, appears on the UN list, but the only two languages that appear on that list are Hindi and English.
Yeah.
And it's also there for where the territory appears on the UN list, and the language appears on the UN list, but the string chosen by the territory is not the short form or long form name that appears on the list.
Yeah. So that is my understanding so far. Thank you. I just want to verify. That's it.
Yeah. And their only job is simply to advise the board, to perform a due diligence check on behalf of the board, and to base that due diligence check in most cases, if not all cases, on the documentation provided by the territory itself.
Yep.
With an opportunity to go back to the territory for clarification where necessary.
Okay,
that's the idea.
This is Edmund. Sorry, I was distracted just now. Was the clarification on whether which type of situations this committee would be sort of called to work? Because that's one of the questions I wanted to just actually clarification. Because in the process, it says that you know if you're in that list, are we talking about this committee will be used if the string is not in, you know, you don't have your string in that list.
Sorry, Edmund, I don't actually understand your question.
Sorry, I'm not making myself clear. The proposed method, the draft methodology identifies a couple of lists based on the language and the name in the different languages. So are we talking about those that are not on those lists, or whether or not there are, they would still be checked by this committee?
No, we're just saying that if you look at the document, it's pretty clear. If the territory is listed on the UN, the UNGEGN list, and the language is listed on that list, and the string chosen is the short form or long form name on that list, then passing it through the LEAP is a formality, because the fact that it's on that list means that it's acceptable.
Okay, so you still pass it through the LEAP. Okay, that was the clarification. Okay.
If it's not on the list, or the language is not on the list, or the string is not on the list, then you produce it, the process works on what documentation are you required to produce. The fact that it's on that list means that it satisfies the criteria. It actually says that. If it is this thing, it satisfies the criteria. If it is not this thing, then you need to explain why it satisfies the criteria. Okay?
Yeah, got it.
So basically, actually, the committee is, the purpose of this committee, the goal of the committee is just to check if the string is met criteria, right?
Correct. Absolutely okay. Correct. It has no other role whatsoever, and its job is simply to advise the board. And if you look at the document closely, it's written in a way that hopefully it goes at least some way to allaying some of the fears expressed by some governments, because it specifically says that the committee should basically use the information provided by the territory, and that the committee should place weight on that information. And it specifically says that it doesn't have the right to veto, and it specifically says that if it feels that it needs further clarification, that clarification is provided by going back to the territory. So what I would like is for that document, which I appreciate that you haven't had very long, to be considered in some detail, so that we can see whether we can reach some sort of consensus, because on that specific issue, on the specific issue of the language evaluation, linguistic panel, because I mean that's about the last shot at it, really. We can play with it around the edges, and we can change the name of it, and we can change some of the stuff. But if we can't reach consensus that even actually having it at all is acceptable, then we have to see if we can proceed without something like that.
Yeah, Chris, I think we can still exchange views on this, but I would not like to speak for the GAC because there was not consensus
on the issue.
No, I understand.
I understand completely, I wouldn't expect you to. So I'm going to suggest that, again, that we move on to the next item, unless anyone has anything they want to add.
Could I just ask a quick question? If you think it was a little bit out of scope, then I'll take it back. But for the discussion here, would the previous discussions, I'm not sure whether it was at the GAC or whatever, that talked about the country names that GTLDs need to reserve for the PLD, would that discussion previously help inform what we're doing here? Yanis, would you know the history there, or staff?
Please say again. We had this argument in our discussion on objection procedure. And namely, when I mentioned that there might be situations when GTLD may think that proposed string is confusing with similar, and so the answer was that in the new GAC principles, GAC advised that there should not be any country name or territory name on the top level proposed, unless the relevant authority gives consent for that.
No, I'm actually talking about second level domains. Each new GTLD is required to reserve country names,
yes,
in different languages in the second level.
Yes.
I wonder if the discussion for that list, helped inform us for our discussion here.
There is a certain link between these two, but no, I don't think. I mean, the question is time. If we would have a reference table today, we would not have had all these discussions.
Oh, no, I understand, but there must have been discussion about that, and there might be some arguments that were made, or things that conspired that may inform our discussion here. I just wonder if the staff or from the GAC that was anyone who was involved in those discussions could inform us.
So I would rather ask the staff if there is any information to share at this point.
About the this is Kurt, about the parallel between reservation of second level names and what will be applied to TLDs. I didn't quite understand the question.
Well, the question is, there is a requirement for GTLDs to reserve country names in IDNs as well, and you know how we address that issue, you know, how we address actually reserving those names and the discussions around that might inform us, you know, here when we talk about these sort of like country names that are being used as an IDN. Not exactly parallel, I understand, but I'm just saying if some of the arguments made or issues raised could inform our discussion here.
Well, the discussions, I think Yanis talked about it. The discussion centered around, first, the difficulty with creating a reserved names list with all country names or all representations of country names in all languages, and that becomes very problematic. And so the proposal that's been made in a letter from staff, and I think with discussions at the GACPO, has been that an application for a country name must be accompanied by the approval of that country, or more deeply, the application perhaps of a territory name would be accompanied by the approval of the relevant government. Is that on the right track, or is that the answer to a different question?
It seems like you're still talking about the top level.
Right.
I'm talking about, you know, for GTLDs, at the second level, there is a requirement to reserve country names. Right now, how is that implemented and enforced?
I'm not sure. Edmund, I'm sorry. I don't actually see. I understand your question, but I don't know what it's got to do with this discussion.
Because the enforcement of which would help us in this language community, because the language community can take those experiences there and say, you know, what the country name is, you know, and learn from that experience. That's just my point. It may be out of scope, as I mentioned at the start.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure that it's as much.
This is Kurt. Actually, I think there's little experience there, and that process we'll probably learn from the process we're developing here.
Yeah, I have to. Yes. Sorry, Edmund.
I was just saying that's probably a good point.
Any other point I would make is that it certainly occurred, and it's got nothing whatsoever to do with this process, but just to pass on information, it occurred to Bath and I when we were drafting the current linguistic experts advisory panel document that this actually might be quite a useful panel for ICANN to have in respect to GTLDs too. Because presumably someone is going to have to advise the board that the application for, and I'm just using this as an example, the application for .shop in Arabic actually does mean shop. Because the board wouldn't have a clue whether it actually means shop or not. So one imagines that they're going to need to get some sort of advice to evidence the fact that it does actually mean .shop or whatever the hell the application is for. But that's very much just an aside. Can we move on, or does anybody have anything else they need to talk about on this, currently on the linguistics thing? Okay, good, we can move on. So the last item, the last substantive item on this agenda is the legal agreements, accountability framework, contracts, whatever you want to call them, in respect to the IDN, CCTL, the operator, and ICANN. And hopefully everyone's seen the note that I sent out, to which Edmund has in fact responded. So the floor is open if anybody wants to talk to the issue of what we say, if indeed we say anything, in respect to agreements.
As you remember, Chris, GAC had a discussion about this with the board in the public session in New Delhi. And the majority of GAC members were of the view that there should not be a compulsory requirement of an agreement with ICANN. That does not exclude that, with the accountability frameworks, on a voluntary basis, if operator wants to conclude agreement with ICANN, so that would be possible. But I'm afraid that compulsory requirement will not get acceptance by the GAC.
Fine. So how do you answer the question of how do you answer the problem of ICANN ensuring on continuing ongoing compliance with the IDNA protocols and guidelines? How does that get dealt with from the point of view of protecting the stability and security of the DNS?
Yeah.
This is introducing something new into the DNS. This is not history. This is not legacy. This is something new. How do you answer the question of protecting the compliance with the existing protocol, with the ongoing protocols?
The argument, this question was asked during the debate, and the argument is today all protocols are honored, and there's no question of stability, and nobody should question the honesty of operators, and they will continue ensuring following all standards which exist. And for doing that, there is no need for kind of agreement, because today there is no agreement, and everybody follows all standards, all protocols.
Yeah, well, they don't. But they don't. But leaving that aside, because that actually probably doesn't matter all that much. The difficulty here is that there is a whole new system that's being created here. And my understanding is, from a technical point of view, and perhaps Patrick or Carrie, if either of them are still on the call, can talk to this. My understanding is that there are a number of IDN requirements that really must be adhered to for this to work. Not like some sort of wide scope RFC like 1591, which just deals basically with a no disrespect intended to RFC 1591, which of course is godlike, which just deals basically with a series of effectively motherhood statements. There are a significant number of specifics in respect to IDNs that do need to be adhered to.
I'm Carrie here. If Patrick's here and wants to speak, I'll defer to him. Otherwise, I can respond.
Carrie, go ahead.
Okay. There are two components to this. The one is specifically as it relates to the selection of the IDN label. And there's actually nothing being discussed regarding the protocol that is likely to impinge upon this. The TLD labels, I think, sort of have to be conservative enough for them not to get anywhere near any of the issues that are currently being discussed in the technical community. The problem arises when we start talking about what is done on lower levels in one of these IDN domains. And there the discussion instantly gets just absolutely madly complex, because we're talking about, on the one hand, the right of a sovereign entity to decide what it wants to do with its domain, and on the other hand, some only very generally articulated set of best practices that some will attach to an internationalized namespace, but because the namespace is not fully internationalized yet, sort of as a hand-in-hand kind of an exercise. The only thing remaining is simply to require, to obligate, utter adherence to the protocols, which is in one sense a technical necessity, but in the other sense something of a logical impossibility, because the protocol is currently being revised. And how do we know how a prospective operator of an IDN TLD, basing that appraisal on the current protocol, will respond to the revised protocol? So you really can't obligate somebody legally to adhere to something that doesn't exist. What do I know? I'm not a lawyer, so I suppose it's entirely possible.
Yeah, but again, I mean, argument which can be put forward, and again, I'm arguing on behalf of a number of GAC members, not all GAC, is that this is in the interest of each operator to ensure that internet works and particular domain that operator manages is working exemplary. So therefore, it is assumed that operators will adhere to all existing standards, because only by adhering to those standards, operator can ensure a perfect functioning of his or of that domain. So, and for that, there is no need for a specific legal agreement.
And it occurs to me that there's probably something that could be said here that provides a lot of relief on a lot of fronts, and that is, because the discussion of selection of candidates on localized TLD labels probably isn't going to be affected by the protocol revision, we can proceed with that discussion, but there should be some rider here that no delegations will occur in one of these domains until the protocols have been finalized. Until the protocol revision has been finalized. It's a fully functional protocol, but it is currently being revisited. So the trouble starts if, for example, some newly delegated IDN TLD believes on the basis of the terms of IDN A2003, as it is called, that a certain label would be legal for delegation on the second level, and then IDN A2008 comes along and says, no, that label is not legal. What does the operator then do? And that kind of difficulty is obviated in a twinkling if it simply is stipulated that nobody uses these things for subdelegation until the protocol has been put to bed, which is very likely to happen way before any of these domains would be available in any case. So it's not an enormously sensitive issue, but it's probably worth articulating just to obviate any risk of misunderstanding.
Okay.
Patrick,
well,
is here. Yeah.
Yes, Patrick, go ahead.
The other thing is that, unfortunately, to extend a little bit on this, different CCTLD registries, even if we just limit to those, have different view on what is their responsibility regarding allowing second-level domain names. There are already those regarding IDMs that think that it's up to the registrant to register whatever they want, regardless of whether it doesn't give good stability and good functionality in the DNS. And I think what ICANN is worried about is that at least the CCTLD registry should make it known what their policy is, and that's why, from my point of view, that's the reason why we are asking explicit pointers to language tables, because the registrants need to know before they choose the top-level domain what the rules actually are and what the implications might be.
Thank you, Patrick. Well, look, it seems to me that this particular issue is not really worth spending too much time on. We either have agreement or consensus that we say something about agreements, or we don't. If we don't, then we don't say anything about it. If we do, then we can say something about it. It's pretty clear to me that at this stage we don't have consensus on it, and so I'm not particularly interested in spending time arguing about it. It seems to me that the current situation is that there is we haven't been specifically asked the question. It's not a part of the methodology. It's actually relevant to how ICANN deals with the IDN CCTLD. We had an opportunity to provide, or have an opportunity to provide, some input or some advice to ICANN, but we can spend hours talking about it, and it's frankly not our major issue.
Mm-hmm.
So on that basis, I'm inclined to just not worry about it and move on.
Agree.
Okay, so we won't be making any statements about that. You should, just so that everybody's aware, in every single conversation I've had with every single board member of ICANN that I've spoken to about this, and if any of you are interested in talking to board members and lobbying them individually, you might want to do that, but in every single conversation, as far as the board is concerned, I haven't yet spoken to a single board member who hasn't said, we will require a piece of paper to be signed. So
I can confirm.
So that's where it's going to be, and without any guidance at all from us, I suspect
that it's likely to be a harder battle, but it'll be a one-on-one battle that CCs and governments can take on with ICANN rather than bogging us down with the issue. So that brings us to
one point. No, this is Edmund. When you say we're not going to talk about it, I have a couple of questions. For things that we don't have consensus around in our report, shouldn't we still talk about what the alternative opinions are and, you know, things that we have consensus and also
things that... Yes, we should, Edmund, but in respect to agreements, it's not part of our mandate. The methodology has nothing whatsoever to do with whether there should be a contract or not. That's a matter for ICANN to decide. It's something we asked the working group if it wanted to consider, but it does not fit within what is actually part of the methodology. The methodology how do you enable a CCTLD operator to make a delegation.
But before the actual technical delegation, like putting it in the route, this would take place. So it is part of the whole process.
The resolution says, the board resolution says, and the charter says, and everything says, mm-hmm. taking into account current practices. Current practices do not include the requirement to sign a contract.
No, I think at the end there will be agreement between operator, but this agreement will be on voluntary basis as it is with the accountability framework.
Sure.
There is no legal obligation of CCTLD operators to sign the agreement.
But they do because for
them it is also it is important that ICANN ensure the stability of their business.
That's right. But it's not our job to make a recommendation that there should or should not be a contract.
I guess my main point is still that, you know, you repeated that all the board members, when you talk about this, they mention this issue. And if our report doesn't even talk about this, I feel a little bit irresponsible to the whole, you know, to the whole process. But that's just my view.
When you asked me the question before, which was yes, but this has never been a part of the methodology. My question was, is this something we want to address? My opinion is there is no point in addressing it unless we can address it in a way that actually is a consensus view. If we can't address it as a consensus view, then I don't think there's anything to be gained by addressing it. But I'm happy to do so if that's what people want.
Well, I'm happy to volunteer to write up something into the final report and see what people feel about it.
I think the only chance to agree on this within the GAC is that this is not presented as a compulsory measure. If that is presented as a voluntary measure, I think that may be accepted. But again, this is a very personal view.
No, I understand that, Giannis, and I think that if I may, I'd just like to look at, because it's relevant to what you just said, Edmund, and what you just said, Giannis, is actually where do we go from here? Because what we put in this report is actually very important from the point of view of whether we're going to get, of what actually needs to happen. The current intention is that the GAC and the CCNSO will actually discuss this issue, will actually discuss a report from the IDNC working group in Paris.
Yes.
Now, that, a couple of things. Giannis, you said that you want that there's going to be a face-to-face meeting of the working group in Paris on the Saturday.
Yes.
And you've got some things that you want to discuss at that face-to-face meeting.
Yes.
Which means that there won't be a report. Which means that we won't be able to actually reach any conclusions in Paris.
Report will be published on 10th of June, right?
Well, not yes, but that's, that has to be a report of the working group.
Yes, but then the idea of this IDNC working group is to have a face-to-face meeting and maybe to modify some elements. I mean,
right.
In general, the report will be published. We may modify some things which then would allow the GAC and the CCNSO Council to endorse the report.
Excellent. So what we're saying is that the intention would be to publish a quote, final, unquote report, but with a caveat to say that the working group reserves the right to make some changes to this, right?
Yes, in the last moment in Paris.
Comfortable with that. But it seems to me that the more complicated we make the report and the more alternatives we have in the report, the less likely the less likely it will be that we'll reach any sort of agreement.
Yeah, in the GAC call, the European Commission insisted on the contribution which I sent to the list, which was presented by Bill D, suggesting that the methodology should be as simple as possible. So, and simply we do this, the better chance for the report to be accepted.
Okay. Fine. So, thank you. I understand that. So to go back step by step, where I thought we were before we started this call was that in respect to Principle E, we had basically got consensus that Edmund had a position that he put forward that I'd responded to, and that what I was going to say to Edmund was, if you want to, you maybe should write a minority paragraph that can go into the report saying that you don't actually agree with Principle A. However, it now appears that actually there is more than Edmund who has a problem. I still think we actually have what I would define as consensus, because I think I've only heard two or possibly three people speaking against Principle E. But nonetheless, if there is a need for, if what I'm going to ask is that if anyone has a problem with Principle E, they now need to put that in writing to the list, because we need to move forwards, and we may have to move forwards with minority documents attached to the report. The same thing applies, in my view, to the objection procedure, although, as I have said in previous calls, I think the two things effectively amount to the same thing. But nonetheless, if you believe there should be an objection procedure, and you want it, my assessment is that the general consensus is there shouldn't be, but if you believe there should, then it's going to have to go into the report as a minority paragraph, and you need to write that. And the last piece is the language evaluation, advisory panel, and I don't know how we handle that, Yanis. What do you think we should do? Should we put it into the document, leave it out?
No, I think we should put it in. Maybe as I suggested, we may add to the title that this is ad hoc. That's to alleviate this concern that this is something permanent. So then again we may have some, whether I see the report as such we may publish, we may discuss, and then for instance in the GAC communique we may say that for instance we believe that the language committee should be ad hoc, and the board will get the message.
Okay. Can I have you sent that note out to the GAC list yet?
Which one?
The language, the leap note.
The diligence, yes, I did.
Okay, cool. So we'll hopefully get some feedback on that. So my suggestion, the way forward at this stage, is this, that Bart and I now draft the first draft of the final version of the report. It's open to anybody to submit a paragraph, say a paragraph objecting to any particular clause, etc. We draft a final version of the report that we get, and we get out, that get that out to everybody within the next few days. But do we have a target date to do that for the working group? I mean,
yeah, I think my view would be we should try to do it by in the weekend, and maybe have a first call to discuss the report next week.
Well, let's get it out first, and then worry about the call after that.
Yeah, but it. Today we could do it. There are two alternatives. Either we send out the full report if we feel comfortable with it and then schedule a call, or we send out bits and pieces where we feel comfortable and then have a call.
No, I think we should try and draft a full report because I think it has to be seen to hang together.
Yeah.
I don't think it makes any sense otherwise. It has to be seen to hang together.
Yeah, but the only thing is, that's why I said by next week, next week is already early June.
I understand that, but let's work as quickly as we can to get a report out.
And so there is one more topic not covered on the agenda for today, but that needs to be covered, at least so we all understand it, and that is the note I send around from Patrick.
The technical issue requirement. Okay, well, people can respond to that on the list.
Okay.
So, just a little
very technical note, by the way.
Yeah, very technical note.
Hard to understand in reality.
That's the whole idea, to show that this is that. Well, no, let me be a little bit more serious. I think it's really, really important that the technical reviews that stop by being explicitly technical and thereby objective.
No, Patrick, I mean, nobody objects technical. Committee and it is absolutely for everybody. It's absolutely clear that technically everything should be right, because if something is wrong, we may jeopardize stability of the whole system, and this is in no one's interest. So therefore, there is no question about technical checkups and as thorough as possible. So.
Absolutely. My point was only that just because you on the call might think that this list is a little bit too technical, it's still pretty important that this list actually gets reviewed. So even the technical community that you might have behind you or know also agree that this list is okay.
Yeah.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah.
Thank you. Suzanne here. Patrick, I'm just curious to know if you and Carrie and others from the technical side of the House would be available for this IDNC meeting in Paris on Saturday?
I will personally not be in Paris on the Saturday before the ICANN week. No, I will arrive late Saturday evening.
I'm also planning to arrive on Saturday, but I can change so that I can be there. What time on Saturday is the meeting?
3 o'clock, Carrie.
3 o'clock. Okay, then I'll just take the first morning flight down from Stockholm. I can do that.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thanks.
Patrick, can you come in? Patrick, if we get a line, can you dial in?
I will. I'm actually flying down on the Friday afternoon. You and I can synchronize this, Chris, and we'll see what we can do.
Oh, you're down there, but you're somewhere else. That's right. Okay, we can organize something. That's fine. Thank you, Suzanne. So what I'm going to suggest is that we draft a final version of the report. I'm going to suggest that those of you who might be interested in putting in a paragraph of your own of the view against stuff that we've said need to start working on that now and not wait for our final version. We get that out to you as quickly as possible with all the sort of caveats and headings that talk about it's not final, it's only semi-final, and there's going to be a working group meeting in Paris and all of that stuff. We will, I think, need to have one more call between now and Paris, if we can organize it. We'll do that and get it out as quickly as we can. Does anybody have anything else they want to talk about?
No, actually, Chris, so our meeting, ICANN meeting, will be on Saturday, 3 p.m.?
Yeah.
Okay.
But in between a call.
And there'll be another call. But the intention is that this working group will, unless there is a major problem, this working group will publish a report by the 10th of June or thereabouts, 10th or within a couple of days of the 10th of June. And in that report,
if you have an objection to anything that is said, it needs to be stated in that report.
Chris, the only request, please don't plan the conference call on 3rd of June. We are having GAC call on other issues on 3rd of June.
Okay, no problem, Yanis. I'm sure
Thank
we'll
you.
Be able to avoid the 3rd of June. My gut feeling is, and we'll get this sorted out in the next day or so, but it'll probably be late next week.
That's fine.
So it'll probably be the 5th or the 6th, maybe the 5th. Anyway, we'll sort it out. Thank you, everybody. Does anyone else have anything they need to say?
Just bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris.
love.